Superman here. The excitement never ends as the legendary Super Friends battle villainy here on Earth and on worlds unknown.
Hello and welcome to episode 2 of Fire and Water Presents Superpowers, a legendary 40th anniversary show. I'm your host, Chris Franklin, and soon we'll rejoin our panel of guests, the Irredeemable Shag, Derek William Crabb, and David Gallagher, in discussing the animated series released to tie in with the Kenner action figures. But first, a bit of history to put everything in context. In 1973, the ABC network debuted a new Saturday morning animated series featuring five of DC's most famous heroes, the Super Friends. Superman, Batman, Robin, Wonder Woman, and Aquaman were joined by Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog, junior heroes in training, and adventures that featured antagonists that weren't so much villains as misguided but often well-intended scientists, aliens, and the like. This was in response to recent complaints from parent groups about the violence in children's television. Olan Sewell and Casey Kasem reprised their roles as Batman and Robin, respectively from the 1968 Filmation Batman animated series, and Ted Knight followed as the narrator. Danny Dark played Superman, Shannon Farnham was Wonder Woman, and Norman Alden voiced Aquaman. Additional DC heroes made guest appearances in three episodes, Flash, Plastic Man, and Green Arrow. Super Friends continued to air in reruns until 1977, when the all-new Super Friends Hour debuted. Joined by new junior heroes, the alien Wonder Twins, Zan, Jaina, and their space monkey Gleek, the stories began to be a little bit more action-oriented, with the pulse-pounding narration provided from here on out by William Woodson. DC heroes Flash, Green Lantern, Hawkman, Hawkgirl, The Atom, and licensed character Rima occasionally guested in team-up segments. Hoping to diversify the show, Hanna-Barbera created new, quote-unquote, ethnic heroes, Samurai, Apache Chief, and Black Vulcan, based on DC's Black Lightning, but circumventing any payment to that character's creators, Tony Isabella and Trevor Von Eden. In 1978, Hanna-Barbera outdid themselves with the fan-favorite season Challenge of the Super Friends. The voice cast continued, except for Bill Calloway assuming the role of Aquaman as the Justice League battled their arch-enemies from the comics bent on universal conquest. Lex Luthor led Brainiac, the Toyman, Bizarro, Riddler, Scarecrow, Cheetah, Giganta, Captain Cold, Gorilla Grodd, Sinestro, Solomon Grundy, and Black Manta in a team named the Legion of Doom. Along the way, some of their origins were explored, as well as those of the heroes. The Legion apparently killed the heroes at one point and even managed to destroy the Earth. Of course, everything was back to normal at episode's end, but a generation of kids were thrilled. The following season, the world's greatest super friends found the five core heroes and the Wonder Twins thrown into classic literary tales like The Wizard of Oz, The Lord of the Rings, Aladdin, and King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. They also battled their sinister duplicates from an alternate world, the Super Enemies, in an episode titled Universe of Evil, another fan favorite across the entire run of the Super Friends series. The next few years found the format of the series changing to short team-up segments, adding in another quote-unquote ethnic hero, El Dorado. Super Friends left the ABC schedule in 1982, although new episodes still aired in some overseas markets. After a few years off the air, the series resumed in the fall of 1984 with Super Friends, the legendary superpower show. Under the creative direction of new blood, like story editor and longtime comic fan Alan Burnett, later to gain fame as a writer-producer on Batman the Animated Series, the show took a decidedly more action-oriented stance. The new versions of Luthor and Brainiac appeared, but this season looked ahead to Wave 2 of the action figure line, adding new hero Firestorm, voiced by Markel Taylor, and featuring Darkseid, played by voiceover legend Frank Welker, and his minions Kalibak, also Welker, and Desaad, a pre-Deep Space Nine Renee Auberjonois as the recurring antagonist. Both Wonder Woman and Batman received new voice actors, with Connie Caulfield as the Amazing Amazon, not B.J. Ward as we mentioned later in this episode. She would assume the role next season. The big news, however, was the voice of the Caped Crusader being supplied by his most popular portrayer, Adam West. Olan Sewell moved on to the voice of Firestorm's mentor and partial alter ego, Professor Martin Stein. Mr. Mitch's Plick returned from previous Super Friends seasons, and Flash Rogue the Mirror Master made his animated debut. The following season, the animated series got a facelift, dropping the long-running Alex Toth Super Friends designs, as well as that name, becoming Superpowers Team Galactic Guardians, with all new designs based on the Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, praise be his name, style guide. Again, the cartoon provided a preview of the next wave of figures, with new Teen Titan member Cyborg, voiced by Ernie Hudson of Ghostbusters fame, joining the heroes. While Darkseid and his cronies were again the main threat, Batman's most popular foes, the Joker and the Penguin, finally made it onto the series, as did Justice League team foes, the Royal Flush Gang and Felix Faust. Mitch's Pidlick, Bizarro, and the Scarecrow returned to cause trouble as well. This season contained many fan-favorite episodes, including two that stand out amongst the 12-year run of the series. The Death of Superman, which adapts an idea originally presented as an imaginary story by Superman co-creator Jerry Siegel in the 1960s, but also points to the more famous DC Comics storyline to come in just 7 short years. The Fear showcased Batman facing just that, as thanks to the Scarecrow, he dealt with the trauma of losing his parents all over again, his origin shown in other media for the very first time. Despite the increased quality, the Superpowers series only garnered 8 additional episodes, and the last new episode of the season, and the Super Friends series overall, aired on November 9th, 1985.
We now continue with the Super Friends.
Okay, we're back, and now we're going to discuss the animated series, once known as the Super Friends and evolved, as we will discuss. So were you guys watching Saturday morning TV when Super Friends, the legendary superpower show, debuted, David?
Yeah, I was like 8. I was totally in the market for still watching the Super Friends. So yeah, I was watching it and loved it.
Great. Yes, great. I was absolutely watching it as well. I think I was probably the same age. So
this is gonna be one of my longer answers of the show, but if it weren't for the transition to Legendary Superpower Show, we all probably would not be here together today because I was watching Super. I don't remember a time before the Super Friends cartoon, even though I missed the Marvin and Wendy stuff. It was always there. So when it premiered, and maybe I remember it because it was September 1984. I think it was September 8th to be exact, because the introduction of Firestorm blew me away so much. I was so gobsmacked by this new character. I got on my bike and I pedaled up to the store and bought 2 issues of Firestorm, even though I was a Marvel guy. This is where all that stuff I kept telling you earlier, I was a Marvel guy. I bought 2 issues of Firestorm literally the day that the first episode aired of that series. And suddenly I was a Firestorm guy, which then years later led to me blogging about Firestorm, which led to the Fire and Water Podcast show, which led to the Fire and Water Podcast Network. So without that singular episode of that cartoon, the 4 of us probably would not be here doing this right now.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
All comes back to Firestorm.
It all comes back to Firestorm. Yeah,
man, I knew that. Wow,
it's the nucleus of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
does that make Shag the nucleus man?
He's the nucleus man. Yeah,
just don't make me say the other word.
Yeah. Right. Obviously I was watching. Yeah. I was 9. So I was ready for the Super Friends to return because it had been off ABC, Saturday morning. For a few years. I know they kept making episodes that were now called the Lost episodes that were aired in foreign markets, but not here. So I was very excited. And I think when I learned it was coming back, it was literally the ad in the TV guide for the Saturday morning preview, like I believe, which was the Friday night before they used to do that. And it showed, I think you can find this ad. I believe a cartoon of Weird Al Yankovic is in a roller coaster and all these cartoon characters are behind him because he was hosting the show. And Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman are in the back of the roller coaster car. And I'm like, oh my God, the Super Friends is back. I was so excited. So we know how Shag felt about the introduction of Firestorm, but how did you guys feel about it, David?
I thought it was awesome. I mean, I really enjoyed so much of, I mean, I learned about DNA in that first episode. Adam West's voice as Batman was in that first episode. There was a lot to really love about Firestorm and his dual identity that I just found to be fascinating and fun.
Derek?
I feel like it's the same answer for Darkseid in the Fourth World. Like without this introduction, I would have had no introduction to Firestorm. Like I adore Firestorm. I think it, much like Shag's story, if it were not for this cartoon and my love of Firestorm, I think it would be I would be hard pressed to have discovered the Fire and Water Network and all this kind of stuff. So yes, Firestorm was literally life changing. Like he was awesome.
Yeah, I was really excited to see him join too, because I like Firestorm in the Justice League. When he came in, that was around the same time that I started buying Justice League pretty regularly, and I bought Firestorm's comic pretty regularly at the time, and I was all for it, and I really loved how they handled the character on there. And I gotta say, I went back and rewatched the first episode and a few of them. And I loved when they showed Firestorm split into Ronnie and Professor Stein. They kind of digitized. It was like this really cool kind of early computer animation almost in some way. And they turned into like video game characters and then like split, you know, or joined together. And it was just, it was really well done. And I liked the fact that Firestorm, you know, the Wonder Twins were still in this season, and I like the Wonder Twins. I don't dislike the Wonder Twins. But with Firestorm, you no longer needed the made-up Hanna-Barbera characters and the cute animal, because he was your young, perspective character on the show.
And it really kind of changed the direction of the show. I mean, he became a central focus of the show, which I know a lot of people aren't thrilled about. They'd never done such a primary focus on just one character. And I know a lot of people who are not Firestorm fans feel a little put out by it. But obviously, it worked for me. And they did sort of similar with Cyborg in the second season of it, or really ninth season, however you want to look at it. And I think it's a great idea, because we'd already had 7 years of the Super Friends. You got to do something a little different, and to bring the younger characters in. And maybe they were following the Justice League Detroit formula. I don't know, you know, but it works. I think it works quite well.
Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, Firestorm reveals his secret identity.
He is two people in one. But how is that possible?
Ronald is with me in my laboratory when one of my molecular fusion experiments exploded. Since then, we've been able to fuse into the form of Firestorm.
All we have to do is concentrate and...
Amazing!
And while I, Ronald Raymond, control Firestorm, Professor Stein guides me telepathically. You can't see or hear him, but the professor is always at my side.
Perhaps you should demonstrate your powers, Ronald.
Good idea, Professor. As Firestorm, I can pass through solid objects. Or change the molecular structure of inanimate objects, like turning this into a bouquet of plastic flowers. Or you, Wonder Woman.
Why, thank you, Firestorm.
I think I speak for everyone, Firestorm, when I say that you would be a welcome addition to the Super Friends. That is, if you're willing to join us.
Me? A Super Friend? You bet!
So we got, as we mentioned in the toy section, we had Darkseid introduced and Desaad and Kalibak, and then later Parademons. But so we had them, but there was a new wrinkle to Darkseid's character that appeared with this show. So what did you guys think about Darkseid's infatuation with Wonder Woman, David?
I do not like it. I do not like it. I strongly, strongly do not like it. I have a long rant about this that I'm not going to berate any of you with, but this was such a big problem. Even as a kid, I noticed, even in Filmation's Flash Gordon show, where Ming the Merciless wants to, quote unquote, marry Dale Arden, that this, I don't like it. It's non-consensual. It's sexist. It removes Wonder Woman's agency. I don't want to go at length about the deeper implications of it, but it casts a shadow on those early episodes of Darkseid for me.
Yeah, Derek.
Well, it's tough to follow that with it didn't bother me much. I didn't notice it when I was a kid. As an adult, it kind of amuses me because Darkseid is simping for Wonder Woman. I mean, Darkseid's a bad guy. You're not supposed to like it. That's all I got to say about it. You're not supposed to like the bad guy. The bad guy is going to be non-consensual. That's the entire point. Like, the only thing that could have been better is if Wonder Woman wouldn't have constantly humored him throughout the entire season, taking advantage of it. Like, let's parlay, Darkseid. And Darkseid gets all excited. He's like, oh boy, Wonder Woman is coming, you know? It's just like, of course she's gonna, like, betray you, dude. Like, she's not into you. Every time she comes over, he's always trying to make a play. And it kind of makes me feel sad for Darkseid, kind of like now it makes me feel sad for King Kong, you know? Like, where it's like, oh, you know, King Kong and Darkseid don't get any play, you know? So it's too bad. I think it's funny.
Shaq?
Darkseid has no game. I mean, he really has no game in this. I mean, he's terrible.
He's had like three wives. What do you mean he's got no game?
Everything David said is correct. It is super creepy. It is super uncomfortable. Let's remove that for a second and remember that my tagline is irredeemable. And I will say, in this season, Wonder Woman had a very new sultry voice. The voice actress, I don't remember the names off the top of my head, but the voice actress beginning the season was very sultry.
Ward.
There
DJ
we go.
Ward.
And then the following season, Galactic Guardians, when they redid all the drawings, that was the first time that I noticed Wonder Woman was an incredibly sexy woman in the cartoons. I was like, well, hello. Okay. So I see where Darkseid's interest is coming from. So, that it is what it is.
The same woman who voiced Scarlet in G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
Voiced Wonder Woman in the season. And so you hear it and then you're like, oh.
you hear he's gone into a coma, you know, like from G.I. Joe the movie. Yeah, but
you hear from millions and millions of teenage boys reaching puberty.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of strange, you know. It's like, where did this come from? Apparently this was an Alan Burnett thing, which, you know, Alan Burnett was one of the story editors and chief writers. He would go on to be very important in the DC animated universe as one of the, you know, heads of Batman the Animated Series and Superman. But this was kind of his contribution was, and maybe he may have done that to, at the time, kind of soften Darkseid a little bit, because apparently they had trouble getting Darkseid past broadcast standards, the character and his name. And his name, he there's this fun bit on the DVD set, which Alan Burnett says, ABC was afraid we'd offend the German American audience, you know, because of the name Darkseid, which is like, okay. So they had to, you know, it apparently came down to the ABC president to say, yeah, the name's fine. So I thought that was funny. But
also, Star Wars was all the rage, and they were talking about the dark side of the Force all the time. Like, there was, you couldn't escape that name.
No, you couldn't. It's all right. Yeah. So I don't understand what the problem was, but who knows? So this season, you know, it's kind of interesting. We talked about they emphasized Firestorm. Some of the characters, you know, some of the characters were more emphasized. Some were more relegated to the background. How do you guys, any thoughts on the switch up of which characters got a little more play and which characters were now basically just background fodder, David?
I mean, one of the things I used to love about Super Friends was at the end of every episode for a while, you would have those individual team ups where you would see characters like Rima or Adam or the Hawk girl. And so, yeah, so there was a certain element where I missed them. But for the most part, I was so captivated by Firestorm. So captivated by Firestorm and watching them team up against Darkseid or watching them battle Mirror Master, that I it didn't bother me. But I mean, certainly I missed those characters we didn't get to see as often, but it wasn't a huge loss for me.
Derek?
I think I'm just basically the distracted boyfriend meme. Like when I was 8 or 9, when this came out and there were the new hotness of Firestorm and Cyborg, I was definitely looking at the girl walking past rather than, you know, whatever, you know, Hawkman or Black Vulcan or whoever the current girlfriend was, you know, like, so, and, you know, I hadn't really, wild up to the ways of network TV. I mean, I think that's just, you know, they try to do that to spice up a new season. You know, you have your cousin Oliver character or whoever it is, the new, you know, whatever new character is going to spice things up. I mean, they even talked about it with, you know, instead of JLU, they were going to make Aquaman the new spice character, or, you know, whatever the seventh member, you know, yeah, like type thing. So it's like that's the kind of thing that they do. And when I was young, I had no notion of that. So I, you know, again, unabashed, you know, kind of nostalgia for Firestorm and Cyborg as like the spotlight, you know, and it didn't really bother me. I mean, to me, I think, you know, Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman all got major focus. So I think the only people that, you know, I mean, you know, if you're a fan of The Flash, right, then maybe you're going to be a little sad. If you're a fan of Aquaman, you're going to be a little sad. But I think those characters got their time to shine in Challenge of the Super Friends. And the, as Shag said, the 7 other previous seasons, this was, you know, Firestorm and Cyborg and the Fourth World guys, time to shine.
Yeah. Shag, how you feel?
Yeah, I was fine with Firestorm and his amazing super friends as a cartoon. and Derek, I want to echo most of what Derek said. I was going to use the Cousin Oliver analogy as well. And the other thing worth mentioning too is the reruns. Now, maybe this is wrong in my head. Maybe they were in syndication or what, but my memory was once they finished the new batch of episodes with Firestorm, they would just rerun old stuff. And eventually they would come back around. So what blew my mind when I looked this up on IMDb one day is there is basically only 8 episodes of this Super Friends season.
Mm-hmm. That's
it.
Yep.
And in my mind, it went forever. Like, it went forever. But the reality was it was just 8 weeks, and then we're right back to, like, Apache Chief and, you know, and then the Middle Earth episodes or something. I don't know, whatever. And so I think if you were frustrated with the other characters being pushed to the background, the reruns were going to give you the episodes you wanted. They were going to give the other characters the spotlight in the Challenge of Super Friends or whatever. So, yeah, Firestorm and his amazing friends is fine.
Yeah, I did kind of, you know, I don't think I noticed it so much at the time, but now looking back, I'm like, wow, I don't think Aquaman actually ever spoke in the Legendary Superpowers season. He does have a few speaking lines of Galactic Guardians, but
he's in, like, the opening credits.
He's in the opening credits. He's in.
Yeah, he has. He's tied up in that first episode with Firestorm. He's literally tied up, and you don't see, you like, oh my goodness, that's it. Like, he's tied up in one scene, Hawkman.
Yeah. Aquaman, Hawkman, they all get, you know, just in Flash, they don't get a lot to do. That in this season, the Legendary Superpowers season, that's still a Super Friends, the ethnic heroes, quote unquote ethnic heroes, they get a lot to do. They actually end up solving a lot of the problems in the episodes, despite the fact that Firestorm's the new hotness. You know, Samurai gets a lot of play, and in this season, El Dorado and Black Vulcan and Apache Chief, they're involved. You know, they'll trim that down next season. But yeah, so it's really just kind of Aquaman, Hawkman, and Flash and Green Lantern in this season that don't get a lot to do, and the Wonder Twins get a little bit of a spotlight, and then they're gone after this season. So, but they had new teen characters to play with. So we had, like you guys mentioned, I think David mentioned, we did have some voice changes in this season besides a new voice for Wonder Woman, which I miss Shannon Farnan. I know BJ Ward, you know, had a more youthful voice, but they kind of did Shannon Farnan dirty, so I feel kind of bad about that. But we did have Olan Sol going over to voice Professor Martin Stein and Adam West coming in as Batman. So how'd you feel about that, David?
I loved it. I think the new adventures of Batman through Filmation had ended. I think it was syndicated on CBS at the time. And I loved the idea that Adam West came in to reprise Batman. I thought it was great. I do wish Burt Ward had replaced Robin, even though I love Casey Kasem so much as Robin, but yeah, I was happy with it. I thought it was great. But I did notice it. Like, I noticed it.
You noticed it? Yeah. 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 It's easy to, it's hard to miss. Right. Derek?
I think I hadn't realized that. I don't think I was super keen to notice that as a kid. I think once they started re-airing them on Cartoon Network in the mid-90s, having not seen them for so long, that's when it kind of stood out to me. And I feel like it stands out a bit more with like the Toth designs on the Legendary Superpowers model. But mm-hmm. I think for some reason, I got more used to it with the Jose Garcia Lopez Galactic Guardians model, you know, like that just, I don't know what it is, but it's like, I think by then I was more accustomed to, oh yeah, it's Adam West, you know, and that's cool.
Yeah. Shag?
Even for me, I recognize it at my young age. Definitely noticed the difference because it was weird to me at first because like Batman doesn't sound right. But the fact that Olin Soul was doing Professor Stein, even though I didn't realize it was the same guy at that point, maybe it helps sue that. But in my older years, hearing Adam West as Batman is pretty slick, man. It's actually pretty freaking awesome. So I love that aspect of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I was very excited. I noticed it, you know, I'll be honest. I know this is sacrilege to a lot of, and I'm a huge Super Friends fan. It was the original Filmation Batman as well. I never was super into Olin Soul's voice as Batman. I always felt like he sounded a little too old.
All right, I gotta go. See you later, guys.
Sorry. Bye. I'm sorry. I just didn't, and that's just me. I respect his place as Batman. He was a voice of Batman, probably second to Kevin Conroy. He was the longest running voice of Batman. Maybe even more, I don't know, if you went by sheer hours, maybe. I was glad Adam West was Batman. I kind of wish Burt Ward had come in, but I always did like Casey Kasem as Robin. But Casey got enough work doing Shaggy. So, you know, if they'd let Burt come in, that'd been fine. Because we knew Casey had the countdown, plus he had Shaggy to do. So you know, Cliff Jumper on Transformers and characters like that. So we knew he was well taken care of. So, yeah.
Well, I've discovered one strange fact about our mysterious hero. According to a spectral genetic analysis of this photograph, Firestorm's genetic code is composed of quadruple DNA helices. It means that Firestorm appears to be two people in one.
Holy split personalities.
So, favorite episodes from this Super Friends, the Legendary Superpower Show iteration, David?
I think it is I love Darkseid's Golden Trap. I think that is awesome. That's where there's so much great stuff in there, from the auction to Darkseid bidding one bleen for a gold kryptonite, learning what gold kryptonite was all about. Mm. El Dorado's battle with Kalibak in the arena was just amazing. The whole deception at the end, Darkseid's Golden Trap, fantastic. And then there's a Mirror Master episode with Samurai that is just amazing. I learned about Mirror Master. I realized how terrifying he actually is. Those are, I think, of this particular season, my favorites. Yeah.
Right, Derek?
Yeah, Darkseid's Golden Trap is a standout. You know, it was one of the two-part episodes, and Gold Kryptonite, Darkseid in a bidding war, which I'm constantly doing in real life all the time. So more and more I'm aligning with Darkseid in real life, becoming more of a villain, bidding all my bleens on stuff, you know?
One bleen.
One bleen? But the gold kryptonite is worth so much more.
I repeat, one bleen.
But yeah, I love that episode. The other reason why I kind of love it is because me and my buddy had this argument, because, you know, again, it had been so long since we'd seen them. So we had this big argument. I was like, well, you know, my buddy was like, oh, well, Batman was disguised as Superman. And I was like, I think El Dorado had something to do with the disguise with Superman. And so we argued over it. And then, of course, when I finally saw it later, I'm like, well, we were kind of both right. Like, El Dorado, like, made the illusion over Batman of Superman. So I was kind of like, well, we were both a little right, but I remember we were constantly arguing about that. So that's why that episode stood out to me. And then I guess as a secondary, I have a lot of nostalgia for Uncle Mitzelplick. Like, I just remembered that in particular, like the giant ice cream blocking the train that Superman or Super Brat or whatever was eating and stuff like that. And I've always been a big fan of Mitzelplick in any of the Super Friends incarnations. So like that episode also really stood out to me. And Firestorm, of course, was a big, proponent, you know, big feature in that, trying to keep a handle on Super Brat as the chaos was going on. But yeah, I definitely like those two episodes the best from that iteration.
Jag?
Darkseid's Golden Trap was not something I appreciated remembered from my youth, but watching it as an adult, yeah, it's everything the guys just said. It's freaking genius. It's hilarious. It's so good. But for me, the ones that live in my heart because of the ones that I remembered as a kid the most were Bride of Darkseid Part 1 and 2, which is, again, the introduction of Firestorm, September 8th, 1984. Not that it was an important day in my life. But also the Case of the Shrinking Super Friends. I really like the Case of the Shrinking Super Friends quite a bit as well. I just remember what appeared to be the giant Lex Luthor. Those always stick out in my memory.
Yeah, the Golden Trap's great. I like the Bride of Darkseid because it does such a great job of introducing Firestorm, the creepy aspects of Darkseid's infatuation with Wonder Woman aside, which now bother me even more. Thanks, David. But no, you're right. It is weird. It is weird and creepy. Reflections in Crime with Mirror Master. I was just really excited that Mirror Master, this is awesome, you know, and I think they used him pretty well, and really strangely, the mirror dimension that he pulls the heroes into, they just pretty much copied that for the Justice League Unlimited episode that we recently covered. So I thought that was quite interesting. It was kind of weird that Flash isn't in that episode, but what's really weird is Samurai's the hero, as you guys pointed out, and Jack Angel voiced both Samurai and the Flash. So it's kind of odd.
Yeah.
And now some thoughts on the Superpowers Collection from the Fire & Water Network's newest all-star and host of the upcoming Peacebound & Down, a Wonder Woman podcast, Sean Ross.
I want to open by thanking Chris Franklin for letting me join on this very, very fun episode. And I just want to say I loved the Kenner Superpowers line back in the early 80s. I was a big toy collector like many of you. I had my 3¼-inch G.I. Joe figures. I had my larger-than-life Masters of the Universe figures. I had my Secret Wars figures with their shields and holograms that were excellent. But my favorite were always the Superpower action figures because they had the best sculpts. They were weighty. They had kicking and punching power action. And as somebody who wasn't as exposed to the wider DC Universe and comics at the time, they were a great in for these larger-than-life characters, and for the characters who carried the most weight and importance, like, you know, a parademon does. So for this, I just want to highlight some of my favorite characters in the line. First and foremost has to be, bizarrely but accurately, Dr. Fate. I had no idea who Dr. Fate was when I got this figure. I had no idea what his powers were. I had no idea what his comic book history was or what his appearances entailed. What I did know is he had the coolest name, the coolest color scheme, and the coolest costume of any comic book action figure. So I had to own it. It was my first purchase in the line. I got it for, I believe, Hanukkah 1 year. Dr. Fate feels appropriate for Hanukkah. I believe I got it for Hanukkah 1 year. And he was my favorite figure all the way through. My second favorite figure, bizarrely, was Robin. But I was a huge Robin fan from both Super Friends and Batman 66. And I was collecting Teen Titans kind of early on. It was one of the first DC books I bought. So Dick Grayson has always been one of my favorite characters. And also, I think I've always believed I could rock a, you know, green chainmail Speedo better than most, which, you know, most would disagree with. But I loved Robin. I loved Dr. Fate. The first villain in the line I had was, of course, Brainiac, because that is just the coolest visual in comics. I actually only knew that version of Brainiac because I had never encountered him in comics. And the first time I saw him was in Crisis on Infinite Earths, where his redesign appears with Perez. Now, I know it had appeared in Action Comics before that, but first time I saw Brainiac, he was in the super cool metallic skull brain case look, you know, versus his just, I ate some bad shellfish and I have some weird things on my head. And so I had Brainiac as a bad guy. I would later go on to collect Hawkman. Honestly, as much as I love Dr. Fate, Hawkman's probably the best best character in the series, best figure with his hot wing action, for lack of a better term. And his Morningstar, I was probably the only, you know, six-year-old in Portland, Oregon, who knew what a Morningstar was and made sure to tell my teacher all the time how much damage it could do to somebody's face, which might explain the meetings with my mom later. But either way, this was an amazing line, and I know it was an amazing line because of the great and tragic action figure backdoor barbecue of 1984. See, I have two older sisters who specialize in real cruelty. They are amazing people. They're amazing women. I was a bratty little brother, and they were really inventive in the ways in which they punished me for my misbehavior. And one year, and I'm sure I deserved it because, like I said, they're both really good people, my family and other families were having some sort of backyard barbecue. I was doing something that was annoying them and would not stop, but I was also surrounded by my action figures. My middle sister said that if I did not cease in whatever it was I was doing, that they would be sacrificed to the volcano gods, aka the charcoal broiler. And not believing in what they said or tempting fate or, you know, just not being very bright, which most little boys aren't. It was not until poor Grunt and Breaker and Beastman and several other of my beloved figures had met a melty end in the barbecue and, you know, eventually became disfigured and part of a whole different play that I would do later on, which I guess explains some disturbing things about me, but, you know, didn't make it out alive. But man, did they know better than to touch my superpowers figures. They knew that, one, I loved them too much, two, they were expensive and my parents would kill them, and three, given the quality of the cloth, they might go up so quickly as to cause a major house fire. So just to prove my love of this line, they did survive the great action figure inferno. And, you know, had those characters for years, only actually selling them as a young teen at a comic book store. I had found a bunch of Mego figures at a garage sale, and I did not know what I had found. But I had those, and I had my Kenner figures, and I was really into comics, and there was some great stuff out that I wanted to buy, and the comic book store gave me what at the time I'm sure was fair trade, and I was able to spin those characters into the very stories that created them. So one of my favorite lines of toys, again, that Dr. Fate figure, man. I know McFarlane is putting out a new line of them. I'm probably going to have to order that and just have it on my desk at work. And even though then I have to explain who Dr. Fate is, and that just makes me look even weirder. But I'm super glad that I was able to join you and join this episode, even if for only a brief moment, to relay my childhood trauma and my childhood loves. Thanks again, Chris, for an awesome episode and for letting me be a part of it. In 1987, a legend was reborn when George Perez and DC Comics recreated and relaunched Wonder Woman, helping bring some truth and understanding to the newly formed post-crisis DC universe. Between the bullets, the bracelets, angry gods, a new city, and a new supporting cast, Wonder Woman rejoined the never-ending battle for a more loving and peaceful way of life. Join me, Sean, and a bevy of all-star podcast guests on Peace Bound and Down, a Wonder Woman podcast, where we review each issue of the George Perez written and drawn Wonder Woman series and try to bring some peace to man's world each month. So find a little bit of paradise only on the Fire and Water Podcast Network. What's so funny about this love and understanding?
Once upon a time, five friends who met on the Bot Talk Transformers forum set out to develop a podcast dedicated to their various interests. Transformers, science fiction, fantasy, and comic books. Part fanboys and part assholes, they came to be known as the Fanholes. Their unbridled enthusiasm for podcasting did not end there, and soon enough, their proper podcast spun off into the Fanholes network of podcasts. Besides our podcast proper, the Fanholes soon had a continuum of genre-specific, focused shows such as Mobile Suit Mondays, Transformers Tuesdays, Toku Thursdays, and Sentai Saturdays. New weekly content can be found on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and fanholespodcast.blogspot.com. Fanholes Podcast, the Pop Culture Podcast, made for the fans by the fans.
When I get up Saturday morning, wanna start my weekend in a magical way. Reeling through the galaxy of superstars, we're gonna laugh and play. I'm just crazy, Bob Bugs Bunny. Ewoks and droids are very funny. Super Friends and Scooby-Doo and all the littles, cause they're kind and true. They've got more fun and fantasy
on ABC.
You'll love it.
Just you and me.
Now return to the Superpowers team.
So now the next season, we had quite a bit of a change. The title changed. The designs changed. How did you feel about the changeovers for Superpowers team Galactic Guardians, David?
It didn't bother me, but I didn't realize at the time how many episodes take place in space. And I understand that it was the 80s. I understand it was the 80s, and I understand Star Wars was big, and I understand that we were doing space stuff, and everybody was talking about space camp and NASA and drinking Tang and whatever. But man, so many of those episodes take place in space, and I was not prepared for it. I was really hoping for much more grounded superhero adventures, but it didn't bother me at the time. It's my favorite season, aside from World's Greatest Super Friends.
This is like my sweet spot. Like I was super happy. I mean, the notion that they're using Jose Luis Garcia Lopez designs and like trying to turn that into, you know, an animated format, when that's, you know, again, it's always spoken about. That's not the easiest thing in the world to do. And every time they promise to do it after this, I feel like it was usually nothing that lived up to my expectations, but this was probably the rare instance where it did. And I am the space Tang NASA Star Wars kid, like when it comes to that. Like I love season 3 of Transformers because it takes place a lot in space. I love this season of Galactic Guardians because it takes place in space. Like superheroes in space, like that's my jam. So I love it.
I think that just to add to what you're saying, that opening is one of my favorite openings of Super Friends ever, with the globe spinning and all those designs and Superman coming in. That is the selling point of that show, and a way to like take that theme and really tilt it on its head.
For the feels, I think I was just going to say like the sound effects and all the stuff that Hanna-Barbera used, like you might not notice it, but your brain did, like with BJ Ward doing the Scarlet voice for Wonder Woman. Like the other thing that always stands out to me with that season is I feel like that's where like all the effects for like Firestorm's blasts and Parademon gunfire and Darkseid Omega beams and all that kind of stuff, like that all carries over into GoBots. So if you pay attention, like a lot of the same like blast effects and flying effects and all that other stuff. So it kind of has like a double tinge of nostalgia for me.
That explains why I liked GoBots so much. I never understood why I liked GoBots. Maybe that's why.
Yeah, in that Hoyt Curtin music, he did like all Hanna-Barbera's themes. And in this season, these two seasons, he like combined his like original Superpowers theme with the later Superpowers theme that started with the Super Friends, what was it called? The Super Friends Hour, the hour-long episodes. I've got too many names in my head. But the all-new Super Friends Hour. Yeah, when they introduced the Wonder Twins. And he combined those two together. And I love this last version of the theme.
It's awesome.
It's great. So Shag, were you happy overall with this change?
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, the art is such a huge step up. I mean, it really is. The Hall of Justice is enormous. It's like got a campus practically. The Hall of Justice is so big, and the amount of space it takes up. The way they use shading on this thing was great. You know, Firestorm hairs finally moves. It's not like a hard plastic dome. I mean, really, and it's a shame that this was the last season of Super Friends. I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's not, because I feel like this became the template for the DC shows of the future. You know, I think the Ruby Spears Superman is based a lot on this stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I feel like the seeds of Batman the Animated Series are, and we're going to talk about that, obviously. The seeds of Batman the Animated Series are being laid here. So much is laid here where I feel like if this had happened a couple years before, Super Friends might have gone a lot longer. But then the flip side is, well, you know, we got some great stuff after this. So, yeah, it's a massive win in animation. And, yeah, the guys mentioned the music, that opening theme. It's fantastic. The animation, the way it moves. It feels almost like going from crap animation to like almost like Disney. Like if you look at like the way, I don't know, I'm probably blowing this out of
the way that X-Men 97 improved the design of X-Men 92, for instance.
That's a good way to go. Yeah, I was going to go towards like looking at the way Snow White, if you watch Snow White nowadays, you're like, crap, that thing is really animated. That's not just some crap, that's really good animation. And that's what this felt like. It, but yeah, X-Men 97 to X-Men 92 is a good comparison.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, even though I love the Toth designs, I feel like a lot of times they didn't capture the energy of his drawings. And I think the Super Friends animation overall over the seasons had become a lot, even more cartoony. I don't know if it was because Hanna-Barbera was doing a lot more, cute stuff like the Smurfs and things like that. And maybe their artists were just, you know, a little, gotten soft, but this, like, I think they farmed some more of this out to like, you know, maybe some of the, overseas studios to do the actual animation, and I think that helped. But it's just so much more dynamic, and it like Paul Levitz and others said, it feels more like the comics of the time. It feels contemporary to the time. It's using the 82 style guide by Garcia Lopez. Darkseid looks way more threatening. I mean, I honestly like this Darkseid design, I think, better than the animated series Darkseid design, like the JLU design. They're very close. It's kind of the same evolution. The Superman animated series one I didn't like it as well, and then it looked better on JL and JLU, and same thing happened here. As far as the name, I they are in space a lot, so it makes sense, but I kind of wish they just called it Justice League, the Superpowers team, or, you know, Justice League, the Superpowers show, because they never refer to them as... They refer to them as the Superpowers team now. They never refer to them as the Justice League, but their communicators still have JLA written on them.
Go ahead.
I was going to say the communicator thing goes back way into the early Super Friends episodes, too. Right. Yeah, that's not anything new. But yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's the same communicator, yeah.
And they've only called them when you join... I mean, the amount of times you call them the Justice League in that show is so minimal. Every once in a while, it's time you join the Super Friends, or it's time you join the Justice League, and you're like, oh wow, it's so weird that they are not as synonymous as you want them to be.
Yeah, it's weird because those 70s episodes, it was in conjunction with the Hall of Justice, because you're not really finishing the phrase, right? They said in the Hall of the Justice League was like the entire sentence, and that's the only time you would get that.
In the Great Hall of the Justice League, right? Exactly, right.
Yeah, and I think the only time really that the term Justice League of America was really used heavily was the introduction to Challenge of the Super Friends, because it literally says, the Justice League of America versus the Legion of Doom. This is, Challenge of the Super Friends. So, yeah, but I wish they just kept the Justice League name. Plus, it's just kind of awkward when everybody says, we need your help, Superpowers team. You know, it's like, let's just say Justice League. You know, can we just say Justice League? That just sounds better.
I'm just going to overdub those episodes now for you, and just going to replace it.
Okay.
Just overdub them so you can finally be at peace, Chris.
I think they just had to sell those toys, man. That's right. All it was. It was the branding.
You know? It was the branding. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Luthor, here comes your fan club.
Cyborg. I don't believe it. Defeated by a teenage Tin Man.
Anyone who can capture Lex Luthor single-handedly would be a welcome addition to the Superpowers team.
You bet.
Thanks, but no thanks. You guys take the credit for this. I gotta pick up a friend.
Hey, did he just turn down an invitation to join the Superpowers team?
It's not the first time, Firestorm. I've asked Cyborg to join us before.
I don't believe it.
The world is full of surprises, Ronald.
So how did you guys feel about Cyborg and how he was handled, his addition to the show? David?
I love Cyborg. And it was voiced by the great Ernie Hudson. I had that first episode, Seeds of Destruction, is fantastic. If you rewatch that opening, everything we said about the animation is there. you see it, all these wow shots with the cell shading, fantastic. A lot of really great pathos about from Cyborg in that episode about him just not having a secret identity, him being handicapped, him feeling like a misfit and a freak. All of that captured so beautifully. And Cyborg's story is really dark. Yeah. It's really dark. And they do such a great job of capturing it beautifully for cartoons and creating some pathos and moving forward. I remember watching this episode crying because I felt so bad for Cyborg. But that's it. That's how I feel. I really liked it.
Yeah, Derek.
I'm going to be a broken record. I mean, this was my introduction to Cyborg, just like Firestorm, just like the Fourth World characters. It's terribly difficult to have any critical commentary on the character or how they were handled. I guess I could see in hindsight, like if you were looking at like the strict representation of Cyborg, like in Titans, you know, he's got more of an edge to him. He has more of a chip on his shoulder. Like he is more of a foil and aggressive in that team dynamic in the Titans. Whereas I guess I almost prefer this version. Like he has the pathos, like David was saying, and it is addressed and it's handled well, but there becomes a point where he flips a switch and he becomes the standard Saturday morning. I'm gonna play the game, because it's like you had the nice conflict for the 22 minutes where I don't really want to be a member of the superpowers team. I want to hang out. I want to just be myself. I don't have a secret identity. This is going to be tough for me. But when all's said and done and he helps save the universe from Darkseid, then it's like, well, I guess you're part of the team, right? Isn't this great? You're going to be my buddy now. Come on, let me show you around the Hall of Justice. Like at that point, he was a team player, and I kind of adore like that version of Cyborg. Like once he kind of like dealt with his issues and got over it, and then kind of just was like, I'm gonna be a team player and this is gonna be great. And I think also being like a Transformers guy, like it's probably why I was drawn to Cyborg. Like that it was such a cool design, like the technology and that aspect of it. Like I think as a kid I never considered all the, you know, the physical human ramifications of that. I just focused on what I thought was super cool about it. And that's kind of how I like to remember it.
So similarly, it's, you know, it's a buddy cop show between Firestorm and Cyborg. So that's a win for me, right? So I was happy there. And for a lot of my friends were reading Teen Titans, and they would tell, and I was not, and they would tell me about it, like on the school bus, and they these mythical tales of, oh, I don't know, Judas Contract or whatever. They just made it sound so amazing. And I was too scared to read the Titans. I didn't know where to jump in. So this was my segue into Cyborg. So for me, this is still who Cyborg is this version of Cyborg. And of course, Ernie Hudson did a great job on it. And it just, I loved the character from that. And the animation was great. The white sound blaster and all that was fantastic. Now, the thing that amazes me the most is when you look at the history of DC and going to animation and stuff like this, this has got to be some kind of record here. Cyborg went from being created to being a major celebrity, you know, on a TV show within 5 years. Mm-hmm. And I can't think of a lot of DC characters that managed that. So good for him, and good for DC to recognize that they needed some diversity on the team as well. And I love the character.
Yeah, and I like that, you know, Cyborg by his nature, and one thing I've always loved about Cyborg as a character, the fact that he is black is not, he's not Black Cyborg, he's Cyborg. You know, that's that he's a black character, but it's kind of like that's not the main emphasis of the character, you know, and they mentioned that in the DVD extras. It's like he's not Black Vulcan, he's Cyborg. And I thought they did a great job with him. I liked that first episode. With it showed him with the kids, like he was always with in the comics with the prosthetics, and you even see his pseudo girlfriend Sarah Sims if you look carefully. She's got the feathered blonde hair. It'd been interesting if they pursued a romance on a Saturday morning cartoon with an interracial couple in 1985, but I don't think they were quite that progressive. But it was great to see. It was great to see him, and I love how they handled him. I loved Ernie Hudson. It's amazing to think that Ernie Hudson's biceps now at like age 80 are bigger than the cartoon Cyborg. That dude's just like built like a tank, which is crazy. but yeah, he was fantastic. And I kind of, I kind of, even though I like the, you know, the Teen Titans and Teen Titans Go version of Cyborg, when I read the comic books, I still hear Ernie Hudson's voice in my head for Vic Stone. And I was reading Teen Titans and was very excited to see him. And I was kind of hoping this would be a segue to get the other Titans involved. Of course, this design for Cyborg was developed for a Teen Titans series that Hanna-Barbera was developing, and it didn't get picked up. And so they put him in the Superpowers team. But, you know, you do see him in that drug awareness ad that you cannot find a version that's got the audio with it. And I think the Protector's in it too, which, you know, everybody loves the Protector, the substitute Robin. But
I love the Protector. I love the Protector.
I do
so
too.
Much.
I think he's cool. He's got a cool design. He really does. Yeah.
I really love him.
Yeah. So favorite episodes from the Galactic Guardians season, David?
I think without a doubt, The Fear, which I always feel, and somebody told me, I don't know if it's true, but when I was at DC, somebody told me The Fear was the basis or some of the material that Christopher Nolan used in Batman Begins, and I can kind of see it. And then Wild Cards, those are my two favorites because they felt the most like the comic book.
Yeah, I love Wild Cards. Like I kind of mentioned that, you know, Joker, potential Joker figure disguised as Ace. Like I loved seeing the Royal Flesh Gang. I think maybe converse to all the love that The Fear is going to get. Like I think I have a lot of love for The Death of Superman. Like I think that's probably my, you know, of all the episodes, that's probably my most favorite. Like I just like the fact that it deals exclusively again with Firestorm and Superman, and I think without getting too much on my soapbox, like that's for me like an ideal representation of Superman and Darkseid. Like I like how, you know, yes, it's like, you know, Superman is essential to the Justice League or the Superpowers team, and they're a little lost without him. And I kind of like that this is sort of pre, you know, the Batman 89 craze, like the Grant Morrison Bat God, like whatever you want to call it, like where the focus is going to shift after that. And it's always going to be kind of a Batman first heavy DC universe. And I think that episode, like maybe ironically or not, the death episode, I feel like is one of those last gasps of, you know, the Superpowers team lost a leader. And then when he comes back, it's like he laughs off Darkseid's Omega beams and sends them packing through the boom tube or the Stargate. And that's, again, one of my favorite superpowers.
Dag?
Almost the whole damn season, honestly. I mean, it is fantastic from top to bottom. The first one, Seeds of Doom, I absolutely love that episode. It's a great setup. It's also the one where we get the introduction to Cyborg. But the story itself about the Seeds of Doom taking over the planet, it's so cool for me because I came at this from the comics, which we'll talk about in a bit here. But like the actual Superpowers comic books, the second volume, that entire volume is the story of Seeds of Doom. Mm-hmm. And by this point, issue number 3 was already on the shelves. So I'm reading the Superpowers comic going, oh, cool, the Seeds of Doom. And then it's on TV. I'm like, oh, my God. Like my mind exploded. So that's fantastic. The guys already mentioned Wild Cards, seeing the Royal Flush Gang, you know, moving around and animation and doing stuff, and 10 being a smoking hot 10 was just fantastic. You know, the Death of Superman is another incredible episode. It predated the armbands. Like the armbands wearing in 92, they were wearing them in 95. So there you go.
Yeah.
And Alan Moore was a consultant on this episode.
Really? That's fascinating. Oh, wow. The Fear, I mean, I think we all have heard that it's also sort of the basis of where Batman the Animated Series, they were trying stuff out for a Batman series anyway. That's mm-hmm. where The Fear comes from. It's unbelievable. It's probably the best Super Friends episode ever, totally. But then I love the quirky ones, like the Bizarro Superpowers team, where Bizarro and Mixoplex team up and they duplicate everyone, and like they're redunculously, stupidly funny. I mean,
oh, yeah.
The jokes
so
are
great.
So dumb, and yet it is so funny. So one of the backup stories, which I don't think we're even supposed to care about, is the ghost ship, which is or maybe that's the front end. I don't know. Where they're out in space, because of course they are, and they find that derelict spaceship, and like there's a hologram chick or whatever. Like that one's permanently burned into my brain. So I could watch any episode from the season and be happy.
Yeah.
Talk about a missed opportunity with like making a Bizarro Firestorm and Bizarro Cyborg and Bizarro.
Oh, the action figures? Like yes,
yeah,
please.
That'd be so great, right?
Oh, yeah.
Was this the season with Felix Faust and Penguin?
Yes.
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 Yeah, that episode was great.
Yeah.
See, the whole season. The whole season.
Yeah. It really is. I ended up watching like almost every episode of this season in preparation for this. I didn't plan to, but I ended up, and I liked the previous season, but this season is just hands down. It's so great. And if it wasn't for my nostalgic love for Challenge and the World's Greatest Super Friends, as David mentioned, I would just say this is flat out the best season, hands down, of Super Friends. And it really kind of is. Just
technically, because, from a technical perspective, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. From the technical, and it's the stories are a little more mature. The fear, I mean, the fear blew my mind as a huge Batman fan. This was everything I ever wanted.
As crazy as it sounds, that's what's been troubling me so much.
You afraid of an alley?
I can't believe it.
I can hardly believe it myself, but it's true. You see, Crime Alley wasn't always called Crime Alley. Years ago, it was part of a fashionable neighborhood.
Did you like the movie, son?
Oh, yeah, Dad. That Robin Hood was something else. Oh, dear, it looks like rain.
Come on, we'll take a shortcut through this alley.
No, I don't want to.
Well, there's nothing to be afraid of, Bruce. It's only the dark.
But I was frightened. Very frightened. And then we saw him. This is a stick-up. Give me your purse, lady.
Oh, no!
You heard me.
Keep your hands off my wife.
Look out! He's got him! Mommy! Daddy! No!
And so I found myself alone in the world. A boy who secretly screamed for justice.
And Adam West got to play a very... He's not the emotionally crippled Batman of today, but he's a Batman dealing with the trauma of losing his parents. Adam West made one comment in the very first episode, "My parents were killed by dastardly criminals." You know, that was, you know, the one mention of Batman's origin on the 66 series. But here, I mean, this whole thing, I mean, the fact that they got away with the Waynes being murdered, you never see a gun, but when the gunshot goes off, you don't hear it, but there's a lightning crash. It's perfect. It's a lot like what they did with Robin's origin on the animated series later. It's just so well written. It's just, I love, and David, you so nailed it. When the scene where the Scarecrow, where Crane is with Wonder Woman and he wants to show her something, that's so like the scene where Cillian Murphy and Katie Holmes are in the elevator and he's like reveals he's the Scarecrow to her in the Batman Begins. I just like, and he's an officer of the court. I mean, it's like, yeah, I felt like, did Christopher Nolan watch this episode?
Yeah. that's what I was told when I was at DC. Like, this is amongst the materials he was given to work from.
Yeah. And this is written by Alan Burnett, of course, you know, who would go on to shape Batman and the animated series. But I also really enjoyed Wild Cards, Seeds of Doom, The Death of Superman, which, like, as you guys said, it's just, and I always, Derek, I always figured because Superman was literally resting in the sun, he was more powerful when he showed up. That's why he could just, the mega beams meant nothing to him that day.
He laughed him off that day.
Yeah. Like, cause he was,
that's just fantastic.
He was supercharged.
I just want to add one more thing about the fear. That's the first time I learned Batman's origin.
That's
literally how I learned Batman's origin. I didn't know it before then.
It's the first time it was ever in any media outside the comic books. There'd never been any on the Superman radio show, nothing other than, like I said, that one mention on the 66 series. It had never been adapted into anything before that. So that's the first time Batman's origin was ever presented outside the comics. So
almost 50 years, not quite, but 45 years from the debut of Batman, did we get Batman's origin in another form of media?
And they've made up for lost time by including it in every version of Batman media. We have to see the Waynes die over and over and over again. So
poor Martha.
Poor Martha.
Why did you say that name?
Speaking of, you know, we already kind of mentioned this, there were several folks later involved with the DCAU, which of course you guys know is very important to me. I host a podcast about it. who worked on this season. Alan Burnett, as we mentioned, he was a writer, story editor here. Andrea Romano was the voice director. Rich Fogel, who is a friend of Cindy and mine, been on our show, was a writer. Frank Parr was a story director. And Gene McCurdy, who was the executive in charge of Warner Brothers Animation, was also an executive on this series. So do you feel these last two seasons, I know you guys what your answer is, but let's talk about it. How do you feel these last two seasons were a step toward the more sophisticated storytelling of the DC animated universe / Timverse? David?
Yes, but I think that there is, I think that there's a step we're missing before we get there, which is the Superman Ruby Spears show. And as some of these people crossed over as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that that was a really nice bridge between, because that came out, the Superman Ruby Spears show came out in celebration of Superman's 50th anniversary, and I think ran 13 episodes. But that was a really great bridge to that. And then we got nothing. There was like a desert of superhero related material. But yeah, I do think that it was the first step towards an evolution of a much more serious DC universe. And I think that a lot of what was happening in DC moving from crisis to something a little bit more integrated was really just really sweet, because right when Death of Superman came out in the comics, it's right around the same time that Batman the Animated Series debuted. And so I felt that there was a lot more integration towards making DC feel taken a little bit more seriously than what people knew about pow, biff, bam. Whenever you would talk about comics, then you'd get those onomatopoeias. And I do feel like this was that first step of making DC feel like a much more mature comic book storytelling company.
Derek?
I mean, I guess I think of it, you know, in a positive sense. I the only thing I would maybe add to that is I tend to think of Super Friends and Superpowers and Galactic Guardians as a very pre-crisis like snapshot in time of DC. And I think David hit the nail on the head, like the 1988, the Ruby Spears Superman, it's weird. It's kind of like this in the middle of the road thing, because Superman's power set and how he's treated very, very much like the Superman from Galactic Guardians, but yet they incorporate all the John Byrne post-crisis elements with business suit Luthor and how they moved on with like Ma and Pa Kent being alive and the family album and stuff like that. So to me, it's almost like that's the best of both worlds. And certainly that, I think Galactic Guardians, Ruby Spears Superman, and then, you know, Batman 89, you know, like those things all really pushed in the direction that you would go into with Batman the Animated Series and everything else that sort of erupted from that moving forward.
Shag?
I can't add anything that you guys aren't going to already cover here, so I'll take it backwards. Rather than about pushing us forward, I'll say they also tied in closer to the comics, because other people beyond the people you just named, we've also got in the credits for these last few seasons, you've got Rick Hoberg. Mm-hmm. You know, All-Star Squadron artist. You got Jeff Darrow, who did all kinds of amazing comic books, and Mike Vosburgh. So some really great, genuine DC Comics folks. And obviously, Jack Kirby was an inspiration of a lot of the design. So I feel like that also ties it back more to the source material as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really do feel like this was like, and it's kind of weird, because I feel like the superpowers kind of is like the last gasp of the Bronze Age heroes, because Dick Grayson is Robin and, you know, things like that. And you're introducing these new elements, and it there is that carryover. And as Derek mentioned, the Superman, the Ruby Spears series, which I do really feel is the next step after this, it's kind of like it's a little bit of the Bronze Age. It's a little bit of the Christopher Reeve films. Yeah. Yeah. And it's the John Byrne Superman, like you mentioned. So it's this interesting, you know, it's this interesting transition period here. And honestly, it's kind of interesting because BJ Ward is the voice of Wonder Woman in her one appearance on Superman, Ruby Spears. So I thought that was another nice touch. So there's some continuity there too. Yeah, I just wish we'd gotten more of this and the Ruby Spears Superman. You know, I kind of
absolutely.
I was just so disappointed that the Ruby Spears series didn't get another season.
Well, the Wonder Woman episode with Superman was going to be a spinoff called Wonder Woman and the Star Riders.
Oh, yeah.
So, but that's a story for another time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. My wife, Cindy, one of her most coveted Wonder Woman pieces of merchandise is she's got the very hard to find little comic that actually the only piece of merchandise that produced that came with Kellogg's cinnamon bun cereal or something. And it was like a little mini comic, like the Superpowers mini comics.
Yeah.
And that thing's incredibly hard to find because Mattel scrapped that toy line last minute and the animated series that was supposed to come off of it. So, yeah. So.
I'll see your demise yet, Man of Steel.
Is it really him?
Just ask Firestorm.
Boy, oh boy, is it great to have you back.
Hey, I'd say a little explanation is in order here.
It's a long story.
Oh, I think we have the time. I think we have all the time in the world.
Well, despite what Batman said, unfortunately, we've run out of time for this episode. But don't worry, Derek, David, Shag, and I will continue our discussion in part 3 when we tackle the three Superpowers comic book miniseries, as well as the lasting legacy of the Superpowers brand. Special thanks to Sean Ross for his wonderful commentary on what the Superpowers figures meant to him and to his sisters. Another big shout out to the Fire and Water Network's favorite nephew, Isamu Hideki Yukinori, for his help with the Super Friends related music used in these episodes. A shout out to the patrons of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, who help support us and make our series and special episodes like these possible. And thanks to everyone for listening. Please let us know your thoughts on the animated adventures of the Superpowers team over in the comments section of this episode at fireandwaterpodcast.com. We want to know what your favorite era of the Super Friends / Superpowers show was, which episodes you love, your favorite characters, and any other thoughts you have. Join us back here at the Hall of Justice in 1 week as we wrap up our special 3-part series, Superpowers, the legendary 40th anniversary show.
An FWTV podcast.